Well, greetings to all of the people of God and happy Sabbath to everyone. Let's go over to Ecclesiastes 1. Ecclesiastes 1. Focus on the blessings that we have instead of those things that we don't have. Now, the following story I'm about to tell comes from Prager University. Dennis Prager is, I think, a brilliant man and a principled man. And he said this: imagine you're sitting in this room here and you notice that a tile above my head is missing. So what do you think you're going to continue to look at, to continue to notice and think about? It's likely going to be the missing tile, even if it's just one. So it's a good thing, of course, for ceilings that you notice the missing tile, because tiles can be replaced and you can have a perfect ceiling again. Ceilings can be completely filled. The problem is this doesn't apply to our lives. Our lives are not ever going to be completely filled. Most things that we think about in life are the missing things in life, and they cannot always be replaced. And this is an important truth. Unlike the ceiling, life can never be made perfect. It can never be made whole. And therefore, concentrating on the missing tiles in our life is a big problem. And Prager tells how he came to understand this principle in what I think is an interesting story. A bald man was once talking to him, and he said when he walks into a room, you know what he sees? Everywhere he sees hair, people with hair, and that's because he doesn't have any hair. And that's when Prager began to understand this. This man saw the world entirely different than Dennis Prager saw it, because Dennis Prager has hair. He never thinks of hair when he goes into a room with other people. And so for the bald man, he sees hair everywhere he goes. That's what his mind is set on. That's what he sees. And I say that this applies to every one of us in one way or another. You know, there's a woman who has imperfect legs, and she goes into a meeting room with a bunch of other women, and what do you think she sees? All these women with perfect legs. She sees them. Another lady complained of this: everywhere I go, I see pregnant women. And, Prager, he wondered, well, how could that be? You know, the majority of women who can get pregnant are not pregnant. How could it be that you see this? But that's what she saw, because she wanted to get pregnant and she couldn't do it. Her missing tile was having a child of her own. And that's the way human nature is in just about every avenue of life. Human nature tends to focus on the things that are missing in our lives. And so the missing tile syndrome can be and is often an enormous obstacle to our happiness in life, because we're going to be dissatisfied so much of the time. You know, it makes contentment and it makes happiness an almost impossibility for a number of people. So there'll always be something missing in your life, and we need to understand that. You watch other people's kids, you see missing tiles in your kids. You know, why can't my kid be that smart? Why can't he get those kind of grades in life? How come? How come he's not, my son isn't as polite as their son is? And why aren't they, as my kids, as bright or as good looking or as athletic as other kids? People are like that. And the same thing holds true of spouses and our work and our looks and appearances. The list actually can be endless. What's missing in your life? Everybody has something missing in their life. And so Prager gave what I think was a beautiful personal example of a time when he was single. He was looking to find the right woman to marry, the right one. And so he wanted to find out what's the single most important trait that a woman should have in order to be his wife. So after every date, he would call his friend Joe, and he would announce that he had found the most important trait in a woman. And Joe would say, okay, what is it? Then he would patiently listen. One night, it was intelligence. Another night, it was looks. On another occasion, on the date, it was a person, the lady's personality. And on another, it was kindness. That was the most important thing. And so one night he went out on a date, and then after the date he called Joseph, and he said, I finally figured out what the most important trait in a woman really is. This time Joe didn't ask. He didn't ask, what is it? Instead, Joe said, you don't have to tell me. I'll tell you. Perplexed, Prager said this, how could you possibly know? You don't know the woman. You've never seen her. I never even talked about her. How could you possibly know what the most important trait is? He said, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Said, whatever trait tonight's woman was missing, that's the one you decided was the most important trait in a woman. And Prager had no answer to that one. Joseph, Joe was right. Whatever trait the night's date was missing, that was always the most important. Now, Prager at this time had not yet defined or fully understood the principle of the missing tile, but that was exactly what he was suffering from in dating women. But it's also how you and I all play a trick on ourselves that undermines our happiness and contentment. We concentrate on the missing tiles in our life, and everyone has them. And it presents us with a choice. Each one of us, we have this choice. Do we focus on the rest of the ceiling with all the tiles that exist, or do we look at that one that's missing, or the two that are missing? You understand my point? Each one of us has this choice on a daily basis in life. Do we focus on what's missing in our lives or what we already have? This, to me, is a life-changing question that all of us have to deal with, because the answer is going to determine how happy and how contented we are in our lives, and it's probably going to mean how successful we are in our life. We absolutely have to understand this aspect of human nature. Think about this. King Solomon, right? He had everything. There was nothing that he withheld himself from. There was nothing missing in his life. He had everything. And what do you think his attitude was like? Let's look at it. Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 2. Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 2. Here's his answer. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. What profit has a man of all his labor which he takes under the sun? Of course, every man has some profit from the labor that he produces every day. You know, there's always some benefit to it. But at the same time, the missing tile syndrome is always there at work. Whatever we might gain through our work, whatever we might gain through our accomplishments, it's never enough in the end. It's never enough, because that's the way we are. Look at verse 7. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. Unto the place from where the rivers come, that's where they return again. And so blessings are flowing to us every day on a daily basis. The fact that we can breathe, that we can think, that we can eat are blessings just to begin with on the lowest level. They just flow to us every day. But we're never full. We never have enough. We always want more. We always want something better. Listen, verse 8. All things are full of labor. Man cannot utter it. The eye's not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. It's an amazing trait about human nature, isn't it? Ecclesiastes 5. This is the way we are. We see beautiful scenery, and it makes us happy, doesn't it? It's sometimes really exhilarating to see beautiful scenery, but it doesn't last long. After a while, we want to see something different. a different kind of scenery. We want to see more. We go to a magnificent concert and it's fantastic. We applaud, we're happy. But after a while, what happens? The memory kind of fades, doesn't it? And we want to hear another concert. We want to hear something different. We want more. It's the most common trait of human nature. It's just never, ever satisfied. Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 10. He that loves silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loves abundance with increase. This is also vanity. Oh, isn't it though? We want silver, and yet we are not satisfied with the amount of silver we get. We want an abundance. And even when we get an abundance of silver, even when we get a raise, after a while, we're not satisfied. We still want more. All we see is that missing tile in our life. The other guy has more. We want more. That's how it works. Now, here is how it takes place. You and I receive blessings in our life. You know, it could be all that we've ever wanted, we say. It could be our dream job. It could be the dream wife. It could be a dream vacation that we've always wanted. It could be we finally get the new home we wanted. It could be a relationship with somebody that means so much to us. It could be a raise in salary. It comes to us. The doctor will tell us, hey, that cyst that you had, it's gone. It's been healed. You know, God has intervened to heal you that way. But then what? Time goes by. That's what happened. Time goes by, and we get used to having that blessing. And after time, it becomes what we've always had. It's just what we've always known. It's what we've grown used to. And so we take what blessings we've inherited and received for granted. And everyone does it. We forget the joy we had at first. Our gratitude withers. And for most people, ultimately, it'll disappear. They'll want more. Want something else. So on top of that, look at the system we live in. It's called capitalism, is what it is. And our culture is all about money. Think about this recent election that just took place. The election, there were two main groups. One of those groups wanted to receive more money. And the other group wanted to make more money. So we have two groups, but they still wanted the same thing. They wanted more money. Only one wanted to hand it to them, and the other ones wanted to be able to work hard for it. You know, my point is, our culture, money is status. We have money, it's great. If we don't, we feel like it's a weakness. But of one thing, you and I can all be certain, it's never enough. It's never enough. And that's because we have human nature. We might make $40,000 a year at one point, and we think, you know what, it would really be great to make $50,000 a year. And then we finally get to the point where we're successful in our trade and we make $50,000 a year. You know what we're looking at? The guy who's making $60,000 a year. That's how it works, isn't it? We always want more. We always want to be better and want more. And I say this aspect of human nature runs through virtually everything and every aspect that we do in life. And there's a cute story that I think kind of illustrates this point. A man took a guided trip to Mexico. And he was there with the guide, and the guide was showing him this unique place in Mexico, and it was unique because there were a stream of mineral waters coming down, hot water was coming down one side, and a fountain of fresh, clear water, cool water, was coming down the other side. And so the tourist said to the guide, he said, man, these people must be really grateful to God. Here he's provided them hot water to wash their clothes in, and then they can go on the other side and they can rinse them out in the nice, fresh, cool water. And he says, oh, no, senor. No, that's not it. They're always constant grumbling. Yeah, because God didn't provide enough soap. It's the way we are. It's the way we are in life, you know. Never happy. Look at it from a historical perspective for a moment. God performed incredible miracles for Israel when he freed them from Egypt, when they thought that they were trapped after being freed there at the Red Sea. He parts the sea. It's an amazing, awesome thing. You'd think you'd never forget that. But they did forget it. The people crossed on dry land on the other side. They sang, they danced, they were happy. They're beating the timbrel, they're singing away. You know, they're so joyful for what God had done for them. Yeah. He took care of every need. And a couple weeks later, they went to another camp, Rephidim. There was no natural water there. And what did they do? They completely forgot about the previous miracles that had taken place. Exodus 17. The people had already, in a matter of a couple weeks, had forgotten the previous awesome miracles that God had performed for them. And all that they received from him was as it was in the past and forgotten. All they did is complain about their current, present circumstances, and they became angry with Moses. And this is so pertinent that we look at this example and understand it for our lives today. Exodus 17 and verse 1. And all the congregation of the children of Israel journeyed from the wilderness of Sin after their journeys according to the commandment of the Lord, and they pitched in Rephidim, and there was no water for the people to drink. Wherefore the people did chide with Moses, and they said, "Give us water that we may drink." And Moses said unto them, "Why chide you with me? Wherefore do you tempt the Lord?" And the people thirsted there for water, and they murmured against Moses and said, "Wherefore is this that you have brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our cattle with thirst?" Let's go over to Psalm 78. You see there how soon they forgot. How soon they forgot the blessings of God. How soon they forgot the amazing miracles that he provided for them. Psalm 78 kind of continues on this theme and makes its point. The people were really dissatisfied from God's perspective with him. But eventually, you know, they arrived at the promised land. And what happened there? They saw the giants and they were afraid. They feared. They didn't trust God after miracle after miracle after miracle after miracle. They didn't trust God would save them. So they wandered 40 years in the wilderness. The next generation comes in and took the land. And they did. They had a sense of gratitude when they broke through Jericho, when they took the other land. But then they saw what was missing in their life. They forgot about God's miracles. And over time, they degenerated, even after King David and after Solomon. And then they broke in half. And then they went into idol worship. They forgot the miracles. They forgot what they had. They forgot what God gave them. Psalm 78 and verse 10. Psalm 78 and verse 10. And they kept not the covenant of God, and they refused to walk in his law. They forgot his works and his wonders that he had showed them. You know, it seems so easy for Israel to rejoice in the blessings and then forget them so soon and go on their own. And so look again at verse 13. He divided the sea and caused them to pass through. He made the waters stand up as a heap. In the daytime also, he led them with a cloud, and all the night with a light of fire. Can you imagine that? They're out in the wilderness, and they have air conditioning in the middle of the desert from God. And he clave the rocks in the wilderness and gave them drink out of the great depths. And he brought streams also out of the rock and caused waters to run down like rivers. And they sinned yet more against him. They forgot by provoking the Most High in the wilderness, and they tempted God in their heart by asking meat for their lust. Oh, it wasn't good enough, man. It wasn't good enough. They needed more. They needed meat. And so he gave them meat. Yes, they spoke against God. They said, "Can God furnish a table in the wilderness?" Absolutely. "Can he furnish a table in our house?" Absolutely. "Behold, he smote the rock that the waters gushed out and the streams overflowed. Can he give bread also? Can he provide flesh for his people?" Therefore the Lord heard this, and he was angry. So a fire was kindled against Jacob, and the anger also came up against Israel because they believed not in God and trusted not in his salvation. Man, does this apply? Look at our lives and all that we have today. Look at all we've been given and look at the hope we carry within our heart and mind of a kingdom, of eternal life, of glory and majesty, and all of that is given to us. And yet we're unhappy? We want more? What are we thinking? Are we like them? Now, you and I live in the land that's given to Joseph's sons. We've been blessed beyond, I think, any nation that has ever existed in the world through all of history. You and I live in homes that are so superior to the homes people in the past lived in. Our homes are magnificent and beautiful, and we have air conditioning in them, and we have either gas or electricity to cook on. We just turn the knob. We don't have to go gather sticks or anything. You understand how good we have it? Think about how good we have it in this life. We drive air-conditioned cars. We don't drive wagons. And that air-conditioning car has suspension systems designed for your personal comfort so that it absorbs the bouncing that takes place. It's amazing, isn't it? We have a player that will play stereophonic sound for us in our wagon. Do you see the difference between us and what they were like? And you'd think that you'd give people all this and they'd be happy, wouldn't you? You'd think they'd be satisfied. We have foods that come from all over the world. We eat delicacies like berries and pineapples and kiwis, and we don't even give it a thought. We're eating like kings and queens of ancient times in the past. What we have is incredible because of Abraham. Nothing you did, nothing I did. We don't deserve this. We're not in the desert over in Iraq and Syria. Look at the difference because of what Abraham did. How is it possible in this world that we're not satisfied? How is it possible that we're not deeply grateful? How did we get to this place that God previously warned us about? Deuteronomy 8. It's the same old enemy, actually. It's that human nature that we carry within us. It's in our flesh. It's never satisfied. We soon forget all that we've been given. We're dissatisfied with what we have. And we look for something else for fulfillment. Deuteronomy 8 and verse 7. And 8. For the Lord your God brings you into a good land, a land of brooks, waters, fountains, and depths that spring out of the valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley and vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive oil and honey. Man, we are in that land. We have so much more food than we need. They throw it away. You know, I've seen homeless people that just live in the back of McDonald's and just eat for the leftovers from McDonald's, you know, in L.A. You know, it's amazing how much food we have, but they throw away enough to keep people alive who don't have a place to live. It's just amazing, you know. So we have all these delicacies, and on top of that, we can have dessert. After we have our meal, we get dessert. You know what we have? Marie Callender pies. Are they fantastic? You know, I used to work for the chocolate cheese factory. There is hardly anything better than a chocolate cheese factory pie. It is so good. We get all that. Why aren't we satisfied? You know, this is what we should do. We should be incredibly grateful, deeply, profoundly grateful. We should continually thank God for all that we have. We should see it. And I say again, think about this. This is the key to happiness, because when you're looking at what you don't have, you're unhappy. You're unhappy and dissatisfied. But there's still human nature that we have to be aware of, even though we see everything we have. So let's go up here to verse 11 through 14. Beware that you forget not the Lord your God in not keeping his commandments and his judgments and his statutes, which I commanded you this day. lest when you've eaten and are full, and you've built goodly houses and dwelt therein, and when your herds and your flocks multiply, and your silver and gold is multiplied, that all that you have is multiplied. Then your heart be lifted up, and you forget the Lord your God, which brought you forth out of the land of Egypt and the house of bondage. This is exactly what they did. Isn't it? Is it exactly what we are doing in the Church of God today? Yes. We're the same human beings with the same human nature, with the same drives and the same desires. And we've got to control those things. That's what this whole calling is about. That's what it's about. Okay. It is the key to our happiness, but there's still this problem of human nature. But to me, this is exactly what has happened to our nation. Look at verse 17. And you say in your heart, when you forget God, my power and my might has gotten me this wealth. But you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he that gives you power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant, which he swore unto your fathers, as it is today. And it shall be that if you do at all forget the Lord your God and walk after other gods and serve them and worship them, I testify against you this day that you shall surely perish. This, to me, is exactly what is taking place. Let's go to Romans 1. Exactly what is taking place in our nation today. In the beginning, we knew God had blessed us. We were happy, joyful over it. We were grateful for all that we had. We proclaimed days of thanksgiving, for example, because we realized how much we had been given. But now we have forgotten who gave it. We're forsaking him. We are no longer the grateful people that we once were. No longer. And the result is this. The following verse, I think, describes our nation today perfectly. That's Romans 1 and verse 21. Because when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but they became vain in their imagination, and their foolish heart was darkened. I see it in the music. I see it in the movies. I see it in the commentaries. I see it in the way people treat one another in different places. I see it in sanctuary cities. I see it everywhere. Our minds are darkened. We don't see light. We don't see truth anymore. We've forgotten. Not thankful. And it blinds us to reality. As the Apologist website states, with the erosion of tradition American values, one would expect the foundational principles of the Republic to gradually be jettisoned, that is, gotten rid of. Sadly, such expectations are being realized nationwide. One bedrock of American civilization that has been compromised significantly is the belief in the God of the Bible. A recent survey conducted by Harris Poll found that 42% of adults are not absolutely certain there even is a God. You see what's happening? We are forgetting just like Israel forgot. And the Church of God has gotten used to the way of the knowledge they have. Now they're looking for more. They're looking for other stuff, and they're grabbing at weird doctrines and weird places to find doctrines and ideas and thoughts and philosophies. We're going out for more instead of focusing on what we have. So what's even more tragic is that it's happening in the church today. We're forgetting God. All the division that we're experiencing in the church today, we say we don't like it, but it's because you and I have chosen to follow men. We fail to deeply identify with God as the primary and first and most important thing in our lives. Instead, we relate to a certain church group, or we relate to its leader somehow. And our allegiance, though, must always be only to God and not to some organization and not to some man, no matter what kind of crazy claims he makes. For many, the empty tile in the Church of God is having brethren to socialize with. The empty tile might be a place where they feel significant and where they belong. It might be that they feel superior, more important, because they're being told that they are, because they attend here or there. You understand? But they're wanting more. They're going out for more and going to all the wrong places when the original place was God and His calling, and that's where we started, and that's where our gratitude should be. That's where our appreciation should be. That's where our heart should be, and that's where we're to be. That's it. Him first, above all things. So, all of these other things that we're seeking as a people are going to lead to strife between churches, division, strife, not happiness and not gratitude. And this is so important. There is one thing, though, that can guarantee lasting happiness. Okay? This is the part where you stop thinking and you pay attention to what I say, okay? Here is the answer, okay? If you want to be happy, the way to be happy is to be making progress toward a worthwhile goal. When we do that, we are always happy. And I put this in perspective. Think of our calling. We have the most worthwhile goal that could ever exist. And we should be making progress towards developing the mind of Christ. We should be making progress towards developing the kind of character He has. We should be modeling ourselves after Him. And the more we work on that and the more progress we make towards that, we're going to be happy. And we're going to be happy no matter what the external circumstances are. I really mean that. And we're going to look at Paul in a minute. That's so important and so true in life. It's what God has provided for us. Philippians 4. Philippians 4. Okay, I can find it. Are you discontented with some of the parts of your life? Is there something missing that you'd like? If it is, if there are things that we're discontented with and unhappy with because we're missing something, I would suggest it's because Christ is not the real center, and attaining His goal for us is not our real first and primary goal. Because when it is, then we are like Paul in Philippians 4 and verse 11. Not that I speak in respect of want. What's he want? What, a new suit of clothes? New shoes? New tie? What does he want? Not that I speak in respect of want, for I've learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. Paul's example is one for you and for me. His external state, what he had, you know, in life physically, meant the least to him. It was his internal state of mind and heart that mattered to him. And he was making progress in Christ's life-changing plan that he's working within each one of us. That's where his heart and mind was at. And so in verse 12, I know how to be abased. I can do that. And I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things, I'm instructed both to be full and hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. What difference did that make to him? You understand? I know he was called of God. I know he was an apostle. I know we're not. But I ask us that his example, isn't it for us? It is. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. This is the attitude in which lasting happiness resides. This is where contentment abides. This is where fulfillment will finally be found in a kingdom of God that is eternal and beautiful forever. The things of this physical life, in all honesty, ultimately the things in this physical life do not really matter. It's all going to be burned up. It's just a different physical dimension temporarily made for us. we shouldn't put our stock in it. We shouldn't invest in it. What we have compared to what others have, it has no real meaning. It doesn't have any real meaning. It may seem like it to our nature, our flesh, but it doesn't. It doesn't have it. And I say that we're no longer to even feel like we're part of this world. Romans 8, back to Romans, this time in chapter 8. You and I have been translated into an altogether different dimension. We're not in the same world, mentally, emotionally, or spiritually, as everybody else walking down the street and driving on the freeways. We're not like them. So why do we put value upon those things that are of the world? Because almost everything that's a part of this world is what? To God. An abomination. You understand? Getting ahead. Being better than the other guy. You know? Jealousies. Envy. Strife. All of that stuff's an abomination to him. We must not be a part of that, and we don't have to be a part of it if we put our mind and heart on what the goal he's called us to really is. And that gives us joy and happiness, and we're making progress towards that goal. For this reason, God designed life so this would be the truth. Everything that happens to those who are called. You remember how it says in Ecclesiastes, you know, time and chance happens to all men. No, it doesn't. It happens to all men, but not to those people God specifically called. Did time and chance happen to Moses? Did it happen to Joshua? Did it happen to David? That wasn't time and chance, was it? That God has called us out of this world in which time and chance and chaos is happening. We're called out of that world. And so he says this in Romans 8, verse 28, famous scripture. We know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are called according to his purpose. And so you understand my point. If we have less than what we want to have, it's good for us. It's serving a purpose that we're not aware of. Things we think we're missing in life are good for us. If you think trials we endure, you think they're for no purpose, or are they teaching us a lesson, something we need to learn for making progress in the goal God has set before us? And they will make us happy in the end. Yeah, sometimes it's tough to go through. I'm not saying that I can't feel it, you know. I know that sometimes things get tough. I've experienced situations where I did not want to be there, didn't want to be in there. I felt lost. I had my share of missing tiles. I know that. It's not like I don't know what it feels like. It's not like I don't know what agony feels like inside. I do, you know. But I know that focusing on that stuff is foolish. Just foolish and of no profit and no value. It's really a value to be grateful for what we do have. It is smart. So much more value. I know next week we're going to be celebrating Thanksgiving. We're going to get together with friends and family. We're going to party. We're going to have a good time. It's going to be a lot of fun. But you know what's going to happen? We're going to go home. A few weeks will pass, and we'll be back in our routine of life. We will have forgotten the good things. We'll have forgotten all the fun we had at Thanksgiving. And we'll forget the reminder that I'm giving you that we need to be thankful. We'll forget all of that, and the missing tile will come back in our life. The missing tile syndrome will come back. And we'll be discontent with what we don't have. So I'm not really, if you go to 1 Thessalonians 5, if you will, I'm not really expecting, a lot of people to take this sermon and have a life-changing experience from it at all. But I do expect that those who hear this will at least understand it while I'm saying it. And there is a takeaway. There is a takeaway here. There's a phrase that I ask you to remember. And that's this, the missing tile syndrome. That comes from Dennis Prager, and it was a brilliant comment on his part. And so every Thanksgiving, this Thanksgiving and every Thanksgiving, come back to it as we eat and feast and enjoy ourselves. Come back to it and remember the missing tile syndrome. Don't waste our life focusing on what is missing or what we think is missing. Focus on what we actually have and be thankful for it. As Paul writes in chapter 5 and verse 16, be joyful always, pray continually, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is God's will in Christ Jesus. Okay? This is God's will that we be thankful and that we focus on the things that He has given us. You know, this is God's will that we do this, and it's an enormously wonderful lesson in life, I think. Being thankful is an invaluable influence in life. And there's a story I want to conclude with that illustrates the point. Rudyard Kipling was a great writer and poet, and the world really did enjoy his writings while he was alive. That doesn't usually happen to most writers. They usually are recognized more after they're dead. But in this case, he had made a lot of money, and there was a reporter who wanted to interview him, and he was kind of skeptical about it, about him making all this money, and he interviewed him. And during the interview, he asked him, he said, you know, it's been calculated, Mr. Kipling, that your writing has been so popular that they've calculated that you are probably worth about $100 a word. $100 a word from all your writing. And so the reporter pulled out $100 and he gave it to Kipling. And he said, I want to buy one of those $100 words from you. Give me a $100 word. Can you do that? Kipling said, I certainly can. And he said, okay, what is it? He said, thanks. But you understand the point. The word thanks and thanksgiving is worth way more than $100. It's invaluable to be thankful in life. That word and what it means can save us from the horrors of this world. Be thankful for what we have. That's what we need to do. It's invaluable, and it can motivate us towards the kingdom with joy. Focus on what we have and not on what we don't have.